Obstetrics Podcast. Today's topic is the AOK protocol in the setting of amniotic fluid embolism. I'm Stephanie Martin, maternal fetal medicine specialist and the medical director at Clinical Concepts in Obstetrics. Last week was Amniotic Fluid Embolism Day, so I decided to take the opportunity with this podcast to talk about the AOK protocol for AFE patients. If you're a regular listener to our podcast, you know that we are passionate about improving the care of high-risk and critically ill pregnant women. And management of amniotic fluid embolism is one of the things we care most about. In the past, we have partnered with the AFE Foundation to develop free educational materials on amniotic fluid embolism, which you can access on their website, amnioticfluidembolism.org. We've also done 4 podcast episodes on amniotic fluid embolism back in the summer of 2021 in July and August, and they're some of our most popular episodes to date. Amniotic fluid embolism is pretty rare, fortunately. It's also catastrophic, and most of you listening will never encounter this in your practice. And I hope you never do. Yet we consistently get requests to learn more about this horrible event. I think this is fear-based. We're all afraid of having a patient with an AFE. We're afraid of not knowing what to do if it happens. We're afraid that those of us around us are not going to give us the clinical support that we need. We're afraid that we're going to lose the patient or her baby or both. And we're afraid of having to talk to the family about what's happening. I also think this fear, coupled with a sense of helplessness, drives our thirst for magic bullets like people believe the AOK protocol to be. Before I get into that in more detail, let me tell you a story about my first amniotic fluid embolism. It was my first day as an attending after graduation from residency. I was a maternal fetal medicine fellow, and it was in July. I had been very, very busy that day, and my only normal patient on the board was a 41-week patient who was being induced, first baby, very young mother. And I get a call in the middle of the night. I was awake working on some other patient task. And they tell me that she's having trouble breathing and her blood pressures are low. When I get into the room, the anesthesiologist is there managing her blood pressures. And I see on the fetal heart rate tracing that there's bradycardia and recurrent decelerations. She's completely dilated. And I talk to the anesthesiologist and a colleague, and we decide to try and deliver this baby vaginally with a forceps attempt while the anesthesiologist continues to try and improve her blood pressures. We were unsuccessful delivering the baby vaginally, but before we ever got to cesarean birth, when I placed the first forceps blade, she began having bleeding from her urethra, which was evidence that she was in DIC. And near simultaneously, she was frothing and filling her face mask with fluid. So we went immediately to the operating room. She was intubated. We did a cesarean, and unfortunately, mother and baby both died later in that day. It was confirmed to be an amniotic fluid embolism clinically. An autopsy was performed. No other explanation was found. And she did meet criteria, even by current standards, for an amniotic fluid embolism. That experience changed me in many, many ways. I second-guessed whether I should even be a physician. I second-guessed whether I should be continuing in my maternal fetal medicine fellowship. But my co-residents and co-fellows really gathered around me and propped me up and convinced me to keep going. And I decided to use this as fuel. I'd already been very passionate about those highest of the high-risk patients, cardiac disease, critical illness, and everyone knew this about me. And I decided I was going to spend my energy learning everything that I could about this and being prepared so that the next time it happened, I knew what to do. In my head, I thought, I'm probably never going to encounter this again because it's so rare. But 6 months later, I was in a similar situation with another classic amniotic fluid embolism. In that scenario, we were able to perform a resuscitative cesarean and save the baby, but we could not save the mother. Now, before I describe the AOK protocol and give my perspective, let me refresh your memory about the diagnostic criteria for amniotic fluid embolism. AFE involves 4 things. Sudden onset of cardiopulmonary arrest or hypotension plus respiratory compromise, Documentation of DIC following the initial appearance of this cardiopulmonary arrest or hypotension and respiratory compromise. This all develops during labor or within 30 minutes of delivery of the placenta, and absence of fever during the delivery process. I want to point out that the DIC precedes the hemorrhage. In obstetrics, we're used to seeing hemorrhage followed by DIC. With AIF, DIC happens first, hemorrhage happens second. We know that when strict AFE diagnostic criteria are applied, most patients that the clinicians suspect of having an amniotic fluid embolism, in fact, do not meet the criteria and have a clear alternative explanation, such as septic shock, pulmonary embolism, hemorrhagic shock, or anesthetic complications. And this information comes from review of cases submitted to the AFE registry, which has been published, my own clinical experience, plus experience from our team in reviewing medical legal cases. It's very interesting to see how many times it's submitted with the description that the patient died from an amniotic fluid embolism, yet review of the chart quickly reveals there's an alternative, very likely explanation, typically hemorrhage or septic shock. So what is AOK? AOK is atropine plus ondansetron plus ketorolac. Now, atropine is an anticholinergic agent. We commonly use it to treat bradycardia that's symptomatic. It works by blocking parasympathetic function, which is intended to diminish a vagal reaction, which can lead to hypotension and bradycardia. That's the rationale behind using atropine in this setting. Ondansetron is a serotonin receptor agonist, and we commonly use this in obstetrics to treat nausea and vomiting. It works by blocking serotonin receptors, and with AFE, the intent is that it might prevent pulmonary vasoconstriction and improve cardiac function. It can also diminish the vagal response and prevent bradycardia. Lastly is ketorolac. Ketorolac is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agent that's commonly used to treat pain, and it's intended to work by blocking thromboxane, which would also be lowering pulmonary vasoconstriction and pulmonary hypertension. All of these things sound good and should be intended, or I should say they've prompted their use in this setting, because we know patients with AFE have bradycardia, hypotension, cardiac arrest, and we know that they develop sudden and significant pulmonary vasoconstriction and pulmonary hypertension with subsequent diminished right heart function. So the theory that these would be potentially helpful is interesting and potentially helpful. The problem is the lack of data to support these theories. The concept was first introduced by an anesthesiologist, Dr. Barbara Layton, around 2016. In her presentations, she has described two cases that she treated successfully with this protocol, but those cases were never published. She did present one case as an abstract at a scientific meeting in 2016, but it was never published in peer-reviewed literature. Unfortunately, she has since passed away and is not available to us to give her perspective on its current implementation in practice. Since she introduced the concept, four cases that I can identify have been published on the AOK protocol for patients with suspected amniotic fluid embolism. I'm not going to go into great detail here. I'm simply going to give you an overview of those four cases that I could identify. The first is in 2017, when Rasai et al. Published a case of a patient that presented with shortness of breath, fever, evidence of infection, and was treated for sepsis. She subsequently required a stat cesarean and became hypotensive, hypoxemic, and tachycardic. The patient never had DIC. She was treated with the AOK protocol, among other things, and ultimately recovered. In 2022, Biggio et al. Published a case of a patient who arrested within 15 minutes of her scheduled term repeat cesarean. She had recurrent pulseless electrical activity and right heart strain on echo, both which you can certainly see with amniotic fluid embolism, but you can also see with pulmonary embolism. In fact, she was treated empirically for a pulmonary embolism with thrombolytics. There was never DIC prior to the thrombolytics, but she also received AOK therapy and recovered. Also in 2022, Wothe et al. Published a case describing a patient who reported not feeling well and slumping over while demonstrating lates on the fetal heart rate tracing. They describe collecting maternal vital signs, but they are not reported in the publication. She was moved to the operating room, intubated, and given the AOK protocol immediately, then underwent cesarean. Shortly after the baby was delivered, she developed pulseless electrical activity, followed by pulseless VTAC. She received ACLS resuscitation, massive transfusion protocol, underwent ECMO, and ultimately recovered after a stay in a rehab facility. Lastly, in 2023, Barry et al. Published a case of an atypical amniotic fluid embolism by their description. The patient received 1,000 micrograms of Cytotec prophylactically after an uncomplicated vaginal delivery. This was because of her history, indicating she was at an increased risk for postpartum hemorrhage. 45 minutes later, she developed tachycardia, fever, chills, severe hypoxemia, and tachypnea, and hypertension to the 150s over 120s. She was described as arousable. She was intubated and given the AOK protocol with the description that her SATs improved rapidly and she ultimately recovered. She was continued on antibiotics and had a subsequent negative chest CAT scan for PE. So to summarize, to my knowledge, we have 4 published case reports on AOK for amniotic fluid embolism. None of these patients meet the AFE criteria proposed by experts in the field, the AFE Foundation, and adopted by the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. In fact, the SMFM publication on AFE does not even mention the AOK protocol. The last case I presented is the most consistent with an actual AFE. Yet this patient received AOK immediately after her symptom onset and still developed arrest and required intensive resuscitation, including ECMO. Lately, I've been hearing a lot of arguments and feedback saying, well, what's the harm? They're going to die no matter what you do. Just give it anyway. And I'm hearing a lot of reports that this is now entering your standardized protocols on labor and delivery for management of AFE. I want to counter that with modern mortality estimates for AFE, which are between 10 and 40%. While that's extremely high, it means the majority of your patients will likely survive the event. But in my opinion, the key to survival is not a magic bullet. It's having your team prepared to deal with an acute emergency. These patients are commonly not managed appropriately because our teams are not prepared for simultaneous cardiac arrest, respiratory rest, hemorrhage and DIC, and the need for resuscitative cesarean. In my opinion, AOK is not standard of care. We do not have any clinical evidence, in my opinion, that this treatment works. There are plenty of anecdotal descriptions. People tell me stories all the time, but these stories have not been put to scrutiny and peer review. And the ones that have do not support the routine use of AOK. Teams need to be simulating regularly on maternal cardiac arrest and hemorrhage in order to be prepared to deal with this emergency. Trying to administer AOK can distract the team from achieving other resuscitative goals, like getting her intubated, performing adequate CPR, determining her initial rhythm, and delivering the baby. It's difficult enough for teams to achieve the things that we have evidence and know need to be done immediately following maternal rest in a very, very tight time window. And we know that teams are not consistently practicing for these events. So to further distract with something that is hopeful to help, in my opinion, is a waste of time and energy, or potentially a waste of time and energy. We need more research. No, we're never going to have a randomized controlled trial on AOK and amniotic fluid embolism. But we have to start somewhere. We need to see this same enthusiasm and zealousness for AOK without adequate evidence. This same zealousness needs to be applied to reporting all suspected cases and submitting maternal serum samples to the Amniotic Fluid Embolism Foundation so that they can continue their work in trying to understand this issue better. To my knowledge, they are the only ones trying to make any forward efforts in research on AFE, and we have an obligation, in my opinion, to support these efforts, given the fact that this is a rare condition. Their website is www.amnioticfluidembolism.org. You can reach them 24 hours a day for any guidance at all. Lately, I've also heard introduced an AOKT, which is AOK plus tranexamic acid. I scoured the literature for any reports on this and was unable to find them. There may be something out there that I'm unaware of. I have no objection to using tranexamic acid for patients that are hemorrhaging, of course. But to think that it needs to be part of a protocol to improve outcomes in AFE is simply unstudied. So my intent here is to try and raise awareness that despite others' passionate belief that this is the way to go and this is an absolutely necessary and appropriate therapy for amniotic fluid embolism, it's important to understand the state of the literature and where we really are with this. It is an anecdotal therapy without significant scientific evidence to support its routine use. It's not standard of care. I understand the argument that there may be little harm, but there may be potential for harm, and we need to know more about it before we begin promoting it as necessary on every resuscitation cart and for every AFE management protocol. There are other ways we can be using our time, especially in the initial management of amniotic fluid embolism. I look forward to your feedback and your comments on this. I thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. You can learn more about our company at www.clinicalconceptsnob.com. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, Clinical Concepts in Obstetrics, on Twitter at OB Critical Care, and on Instagram at Critical Care OB. You can email us or send a direct message for any suggestions on future podcasts.
This podcast was produced by Austin Baird. Are you looking to create a podcast? Please email me at podcastnashville@gmail.com. That is podcastnashville@gmail.com.